Welcome back to the Shauna Project podcast. In this one, we are going to be talking about girls in sport, keeping them in sport, why it's important, and why, Tammy, I should not be a coach.
Yeah, it's about time somebody told you.
It's really interesting. And like you've, again, as with a lot of topics that we've discussed on the podcast, because you have a daughter that's at the end of her teenage years, and also Freya's been so involved in sport, and you've been really involved in sport as well as a coach, that I think that it's really important topic.
Yeah, like sport has brought so much to our family. You know, Freya grew up on a sideline watching her older brother, who would have played at a high level. She would have been dragged to every match, and then she started playing herself. And for years, she was the only girl on the boys' team, and now she's League of Ireland. And like, we've really been through, like, it has brought so much to our houses. And I think it's a great leveler, because always on the Monday mornings, yeah, on the way to school, we're dissecting the match and let's chat about it. And, you know, but it's also, and it's brought great opportunities for her in terms of building her confidence, but it's also brought huge challenges at the level that she's at, with things like injuries and how that impacts her and trying to win her place. And it's very, very stressful trying to live up to the expectations. So I think once you get to a certain level, it's as much about your mindset as it is the talent you have. So there's that side of things. But then there's also, you know, just if you're not competitive, and if you think sport is not for you, which, you know, sport, apart from the competitive side, it's so important. It gives you such value for like taking of yourself and your body as, you know, something that you're going to need to, that's going to be the tool that will get you to achieve everything you want in your life, whether that's a physical thing or a mental thing, right? It's a tool. And so many girls are dropping out. So you've seen that Allianz ad, right? That's going to.
Yeah. So that's really something that, you know, and again, because as you say about Freya's experience and then Joan's experience, is that she's been on an underage football team for 3 years now. My husband became a coach, and just seeing her progress and seeing what it brings to our life as well, and our family life, as you said, Tammy, because it's three times a week, and, you know, she looks forward to it. And my husband really does love coaching it. So it's brought a lot of nice things and positive things to our life as well, that they've both gotten involved in this. So we want to talk about it as a subject because of that drop-off rate for teenage girls. And Anna Geary is someone who's lived as a sporting career. Like, she's had the sporting career. She's had a very public career. She's, you know, had a TV documentary about keeping girls in sport. And she's published a book that deals with this, in part deals with this. So we thought she would be an excellent guest for this episode.
Well, she's a great role model too, you know, just being always with me, authenticity, you know. Celebrating the fact that you had to fight to get here, and it's for everyone. So really looking forward to chatting to her today.
Excellent. And we're delighted that she's joining us now. Anna Geary, how are you?
And how are you doing? Thank you so much for having me on. I am really genuinely looking forward to this chat.
Me too. I don't know if you've met Tammy Darcy before.
Oh, you are an absolute powerhouse of a woman. You are doing you're doing such brilliant things. These are conversations that we need to be having. And, you know, I suppose really for me, it's, I wish these conversations were being had when I was a teenager. Because I feel that a lot of my friends would probably be still playing sport if this was a narrative that we were discussing.
Mm. Exactly. Now, Anna, we're going to come to it in a little while, but you do discuss many of the things I'm going to be putting to you in your new book. So I want to hear about the book in a second as well. But first of all, I suppose we all see statistics. There's a really powerful ad happening at the moment now where a girl's walking off the pitch and there's a tower of helmets behind her. And it's all about this issue of girls having this drop-off point in their life when they do tend to leave team sport or sport in general if they were even playing it earlier in life. And we just want to ask about that.
It's a very powerful and very engaging ad. Like, it definitely gets your attention. And if I'm honest, I have been that girl.
And do you think, Anna, then that obviously there's a two-pronged thing that's coming to mind there, is just the culture of the clubs and, you know, managers and coaches. And, you know, there's been a lot written about, you know, parents on the sideline, coaches on the sideline, and it becoming too competitive at the underage level, especially in GAA. But then also what kind of conversations we as parents can have with our kids about keeping them in it.
So I think with clubs, and I suppose the conversations do start in the house with parents, and I suppose the the enjoyment is fostered at home, because if the conversations are always about the first question that you ask them, they come in the door, if you haven't been to a game, did you win? Well, that creates a type of environment where the younger the child or even the teenager thinks, oh, well, that's the only thing that matters. Like, that's the bottom line. Everything else is irrelevant. The physical exercise, the mental health benefits, the social aspect, that all that stuff is irrelevant because they just care about whether or not I won. And if you won, great. But then your enjoyment is associated with winning. It's not with the actual sport that you're playing. And if you lose, well, then it's near like, well, I'm not good enough. And then this isn't making me feel good. And again, going back to why would any of us do something if it's not making us feel good? So I really think that we need to start with the language that we use around sport, especially for younger people. And it really should be, did you enjoy yourself today?
Yeah.
Tell me about the game. You know, did you do something new? And even if you do, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't necessarily believe, particularly for teenagers, not younger kids, but I don't believe in this mentality that everyone's a winner. Because I do think when I look back on my time with sport, some of the greatest gifts that sport gave me were dealing with setbacks, dealing with not getting picked for teams, dealing with losses and with the disappointment and the upset and building that resilience. So then when I went for the job as an adult and I didn't get it, or the exam didn't go according to plan, that I had those skills in my armory to deal with life. And I think that is fundamental to all of us. I think that's why people should play sport. But let's redefine, though, how we're having conversations around sport in the home, even as the coach, in the team. It's not, we need to go out there and win. No, and it is really about reinforcing we need to go out and do our best. And bear with me, because there might be some people, but, oh, like I am, you know, former Ireland winning captain. I have over 20 All-Ireland medals. So it's not that I don't place value on the awards and the trophies, but looking back now, at my time as a person and now as a mother, and I have a boy who I hope grows up to play sport, I think it's really important that we start redefining what success looks like in sport, particularly.
Totally.
You know, and I think if we can start there and saying, well, you know, take the coach that makes training fun and still is, you know, demanding the kids get the best out of themselves and that they push themselves and that it's a competitive environment, but that it's underpinned by fun. If that coach in 2024 has 20 boys or girls walking through those gates, and in 2025, he or she has 20 players or maybe 21 or 22 players, that's success. Because if that coach wins the trophy 2024 and only 12 players come back the following year, are we really after succeeding? We got the trophy, but maybe 8 kids said, I don't like this anymore. I you know, I feel embarrassed when I make mistakes. I'm not getting picked for the team. You know, I'm being isolated. It's not for me.
Anna, going back to what you said about parents. So I've seen a side of parents who are lovely, normal people in real life on a sideline that I have never seen before. It definitely brings something out in some parents. And, you know, you wonder why kids are so stressed about their performance in sport. But one of the things that I noticed, and just specific to girls, is one of the main reasons why I started the Shona Project is that I used to coach soccer, right? I don't know if I talked about this in the podcast before, Alison, but I used to coach boys and girls. And what I noticed, and this is a little bit of a generalization, but not a huge one, whenever our team lost, all the boys would blame everybody else. You know, they'd be like, oh, the ref was crap, or that shouldn't have been offside, or he didn't pass. Like, it was always everybody else's fault. Every single girl I've ever coached blames herself and thinks that she left everybody else down. I've seen girls crying walking off a pitch because they have this huge weight of, this is my fault, I wasn't good enough. Why is that? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me, because most girls are coached in the same way. And I actually learned how to coach them differently, because I was like, to get the most out of these girls, you need to first of all build their confidence and their self-esteem, and also their sense of it's not all your responsibility. You're part of a team. You work together, you support each other. So is that something you've noticed? And if it is, how do we sort that out?
I would say, in my own opinion, and having spoken to coaches in the past that have coached and managed both men and women, boys and girls, there is a different approach for the most part that's needed. And I completely agree. I think girls and women, as a generalization, tend to internalize things. We tend to look towards ourselves and say, oh my God, am I to blame? Am I good enough? You know, do I bring value to this environment? Whether that's a work environment or whether that's a sport environment, we do tend to do that as women in general. And I even take our club coach, Frankie Flannery, when he got involved with us, it was a senior club team. And he had come from inter-county men's environments. He trained different men's teams, you know, and even younger kids. And he'd also trained inter-county women's teams. And he had a wide mix of different men and women, young and old, that he coached. And he would have said that his approach had to be to build the trust first when it came to women's teams. That was so important to build, like you said, to build up the confidence, but really the trust. The trust is key. And I don't know if it's as important with men's teams. Perhaps it's not. But he felt he needed to nearly get to know the people behind the players when it came to women's teams, to have that relationship and to have that understanding and to be able to have those conversations, you know, about how's everything going, or, you know, is everything going okay? Or if, you know, if your confidence dipped, how to get it back up again. So there's no point saying that it's a one size fits all, because it's not. So again, I suppose it's stepping back and even observing the group of girls or boys that you have, and particularly the group of girls, because especially as teenagers, you know, girls are developing at different rates. There are different levels of confidence, you know, even friendship groups. It can be quite isolating if you're not in the clique or in the popular group. So all of that, I think, as coaches, you need to step back and observe it. And even for a coaching session, sometimes it might be good to give very limited instruction and see what happens. See the natural leaders that emerge. Who are the ones that are trying to organize things? Who are the ones that are trying to take over? Who are the ones that are trying to boss things? Who are the ones that stay on the fringes that are happy enough to not really get involved unless they're asked to? And that can actually be a really good thing to get to know how people tick and what to say.
So, Anna, I suppose the big thing is, you know, trying to keep them into it, of course, but talk about the importance, and we'll just focus on teenage girls in particular. And I can see with my daughter's football team, and my husband's actually coaching it, he's a better coach, because like he said, I know, she walks to the door, I'm like, did you guys win? Because I can never go because I'm on air when the matches are on. And he's like, Allison, I'm like, sorry. But the idea of the importance of it, I can see in her confidence growing. But just for you to talk about it, I suppose, as someone who's lived experience and someone who is very, you're speaking about it in your book as well, the importance of keeping them in sport.
Look, sport has been the greatest gift, I think, that I've ever been given. And that is from a physical health point of view, from a mental health point of view, from a mindset point of view, from a self-confidence and like body image point of view. I'm really grateful to, now, I didn't grow up in a time as a teenager where there was social media. So I don't pretend to know what it's like to be a teenager growing up in that world. And I think that's something as well that coaches and parents need to be mindful of. Even I can remember as a teenage girl playing sport, and there sometimes being, you know, images of you, like, you know, like that they take an action shot, and it mightn't be the most flattering angle, and it'll appear in your nook and newspaper or wherever. And like that was, I suppose, like that as a teenager when you were, you know, figuring out your body and you had the insecurities. But what sport always reminded me of was, and I know Tammy speaks about this too, is that your body is an instrument. It's not an ornament. It's about what your body can do, how you can push it, how strong you can make it, how fast you can make it. And there's such a confidence that comes from that, knowing, you know what? I owe it to my body, to this vehicle that I live in, day out, to mind it. Because it's the only vehicle that we're ever going to have until the day that we leave this earth. And if you can train yourself from a young age from a sport to get involved in sport and to enjoy it, it is one of the best things that you can ever do for your body. And what it did for me as a teenager, it made me realize that I have a sense of control and a sense of power over what I do with my body. And I suppose being in the gym and getting fitter and getting stronger and getting faster. And I suppose even like muscle definition, everyone talks about toning up. Well, sport is one of the best things that you can do to help build muscle. And that muscle will live with you all the way until your 80s and your 90s. And it gets harder to build muscle as you get older. So the earlier you can start building muscle, the better. And when people think, when they hear building muscle, they think big and bulky. Absolutely not. Like, muscle by its very nature is like lean and svelte, and it's under the, like, it's under the skin. But when you are building muscle, you're actually toning. Unless you're eating loads and loads of protein and lifting extremely heavy weights, you're not going to get big and bulky. So that's one of the first myths, I think, that needs to be dispelled when it comes to exercise. But I am so grateful that it gave me an appreciation for my body, you know, and it really, like, there's lots of people in this life, whether it's through illness, through injury, through disability, that don't get the opportunity and the privilege to play sport. And for those of us that do, you know, we're nearly doing it for them as well. We're getting out there, we're challenging ourselves, and we're doing it for them. And I would say to a lot of parents as well, particularly if you had negative experiences with sport growing up, or if you have a daughter and you think, oh, you know, she's kind of into music and she's into her makeup and she's into her tan, I don't know if she's the sporty type. Everybody is the sporty type. There is a sport out there for everybody. If, you know, they don't particularly like competitive sports or contact sports, there's something else they could do. They could do dance. I mean, there's hula hooping even now that you can get involved in clubs. There's so many different types of sports that are out there. It's just about matching you up and finding the right one. And, you know, from a mindset perspective, and I spoke about that earlier on about the resilience, the life skills that you learn from sport will take you all the way through life. And I suppose for me, when I wrote the book, that's what I wanted to share. I wanted to share that message to people about the opportunities, the lessons, the skills that I learned from sport, from the times when things went well, but probably more importantly, from the times that it didn't, from the setbacks, from the disappointments, from the challenges, and how I deal with them. Because how I dealt with them as a teenager and as a young adult and even now is, for the most part, very similar to a lot of other people. The circumstances might change, but ultimately the skills that we can all learn and use are the same. So it's about helping people along. And I suppose that for me was what I want, is by sharing the stories. And a lot of them I've actually never shared before publicly. So I was quite vulnerable writing about getting dropped from teams and standing in front of a mirror and dancing with the stars and kind of really having to, you know, to own, you know, all my body insecurities as I danced in front of 500,000 people. All of those stories, I suppose, really come back to about the way in which that we live our lives and how we deserve to live our lives in a way that makes us feel good. And sport and exercise has been a constant in my life, because even on the days that I didn't necessarily want to get up and train, or I didn't have the motivation to go to the gym, I knew I was going to feel better afterwards. And like, if you know you can do something that will help you feel better afterwards, well, you know, that's a no-brainer for me. And, you know, it's scientifically proven. It's not me just saying it for the sake of it. Sport and exercise makes you feel better. So we owe it to younger people than to teenagers to encourage them to stay in sport, knowing that it will help them right throughout their lives.
That being the case then, Anna, can I ask you about the other side? Because there's a lot of conversations at the moment about keeping young girls in sport, especially, you know, around the age of 13, 14, and the benefits to your body, to your mental health. Like, I just read a report there this morning that 94% of females in leadership played sport growing up, which is a huge amount. But on the other side, a side of it that I haven't heard spoken about very often, and it's something I've really noticed, is when you are that, like, really super competitive, when you're at a high level, Freya plays at a high level, she has done through her whole teens, it's been a huge part of her life, a huge commitment. But girls kind of get into that older age of 18, 19, where they have other stuff going on, but their whole identity is, you're the girl who plays sport. And you have given sacrifice after sacrifice. You've gotten injured and had to deal with the mental health impact of, you know, trying to fight for your place and all of that. That's really, really stressful. So when sport, and I'm sure you identify with this, you know, I'm sure, Anna, were always, you know, the girl who plays camogie, the girl who wins the All-Irelands and all that. How do we support girls at that side of things where it becomes stressful and they're starting to question, is this taking more for me than I'm actually getting in return? Is the expectation too much? What would you say to that question?
And I think a lot of girls that play at a decent level or a high level, or I would say give an incredible amount of commitment to sport, at one time or another would question that. And I would be lying if I said I didn't at some point. But I think it goes back to what your priorities are in life and what's important to you. And that varies from person to person, from teenager to teenager. And when I think back to sport, it is very easy to stay committed and determined and motivated when you're winning. Like it is when you're successful in your achievement and you're going out to win an All-Ireland and you win. Of course, that I suppose that type of reward does keep you in it. But it's starting to reassess what the reward is. And I think it's starting to go back and redefining what's the reward here. If you're only playing sport and being on a team and committed because of the end goal, trying to win the League of Ireland or, you know, trying to win the All-Ireland or trying to make the Olympics, whatever it is, if that's your only reward, well, then the probability of you reaching that and getting that reward is obviously quite small. And if that's it, well, of course, then it's going to be hard to stay motivated and stay committed when things don't go according to plan and you fall short of that. So I think we need to start revising what the reward is. And okay, even from a business point of view, like let's take sport. Playing sport at a high level, playing sport with a team, being collaborative, working with, you know, different personalities, people that you might necessarily be friends with, but that you're able to understand there's a shared goal here and you're still able to work together regardless. Go into any interview for a job and speak about that. And not have that person sit in front of you impressed. I think it would be a very hard ask, because I worked in recruitment for years. And I remember my first actual job after I graduated from college, it was an American boss and she was so impressed. She didn't ask me about my grades in college. She didn't ask me about my leaving cert points. She asked me what it was like to play in a team. And she started going into, and like, what about people that you didn't get along with? And how did you deal with it when you had a setback? She was fascinated by my willingness to play a sport for so many years that I wasn't getting paid for, to give up my free time and to put it in to this team for no, you know, monetary reward. And I got that job because of my ability to show I was capable of working in teams and able to give commitment, and, you know, I was disciplined enough to. So we have to, I suppose, start thinking about the bigger picture. And it's not just, and I think for any girls that are out there, even the opportunity maybe to travel abroad. You know, I lived in Luxembourg for a year. And what was one of the first things that I did? I went to the local GA club. Because it was an outlet, it was a community of people, it was a support structure straight away. And I was welcomed in there. And they were like, oh my God, that's brilliant. Yeah, come on in. Suddenly I had people advising me, you know, what the best way to rent a house was in Luxembourg, if I needed to set up a bank account. They were helping me even from a social scene. So bigger picture is that it does impact on you in a positive way in lots of other aspects of your life. But as was really what the honest conversations that need to be had is if from a mental health or from a mindset, if you find that you are in a negative headspace, sometimes it's important to take a step back. Doesn't mean you have to give it up, but maybe put a pin in it. Maybe take a few weeks off training. And I think that's where open communication with coaches is really important as well. Because, and it goes back to the trust. If you have trust with a coach and you have a very honest, open communication with them, say, you know, I'm not feeling great at the moment. This is all getting in on top of me. I think I need to step back for a few weeks. Having that time and that space and that trust in that relationship to step back could be all you need. You know,
I think that's really important, Anna, to mention, because I think that's the thing where people kind of say, if you stop for a while, then it's like you've just given up or you're not going to come back. But I think that's really important. I've never heard that articulated, that just taking a pause for a minute to reflect, and then the chances are you will want to come back. I know with like my own daughter, when it goes to training, and she's like literally under 13, it's like, it's a small team, they're doing well, but there's Tuesdays where she's like, I don't want to go, or Thursdays. And once she's there, she's good. So I think you just need that smaller level of pause. Do you know what I wanted to say as well? Is I did something last year where I spoke to a bunch of, I was telling you, Anne, I was spoke to a bunch of 11, 12, 13 year old girls. And I was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was such a varied answers. There was loads of different answers. Footballers were in there a little bit. Fast forward, it's almost a year to the day I was doing it a few weeks ago. I would say 80% of them said footballers. And that is down to, you know, Katie McCabe, Amber, all those guys, that witnessing, being able to watch the matches, the World Cup matches, like all of that had changed in the last year. So the whole idea of if you can see it, you can believe it. Like you probably very much agree with that.
Yeah. First and foremost, it has to be about visibility. Like when I think about when I was growing up, you know, I didn't have we had Sonia Sullivan, we had Dervla O'Rourke, you know, we had a few people that you looked at, but in terms of a widespread of athletes across the board, it wasn't really seen. And I also didn't see people that looked like me. Like Dervil and Sonia Sullivan, you know, they're tall, they're lean. I'm quite muscular. I'm shorter. I wanted to see women that looked like me more on camera, because I suppose that when you see somebody that reflects how you look, maybe how you play, whatever sport you're in, it does. Of course it does. It gives you that boost. She's like, I want to be like her. So I'm delighted to hear that there was that increase in players wanting to be footballers. But I think as well, it isn't just about football or camogie or rugby or, you know, whatever it is. It is about opening up parents and girls' minds to the idea that you could be a swimmer, you could play badminton, you know, you could, you know, do horse riding, whatever it is. Now, sometimes resources and, you know, financial availability comes into play. It absolutely does. But sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it is about the parents stepping out of the comfort zone and showing, well, I'm going to play Gaelic from others and others, even though I've never played sport before. But I'm going
that
to
was me a few years ago.
It's okay, but it's okay to try a new sport and to never have played before, and you know, and you coming back with the smile on your face and they go, I really enjoyed that. That was brilliant, and I made new friends. It is about allowing girls to experience more than just GAA. Like I said, I have a 7-month-old boy, baby Ronan, and I would love for him to be able to play GAA. Right, of course I would, because you know, my dad loved GAA, my husband and I love GAA. But if he comes to me and he says, "Oh, you know, I tried and I don't really want it," I might be a bit disappointed, I'll be honest. But it's not going to do me any favors by trying to push him into GAA, because then he might just give up sport entirely. So maybe then I say, "Okay, well, what else? What do you like? Let's try out a few things and see what you do enjoy." Because it is the retention. The retention part is key.
Yeah, definitely.
And I agree with you about the visibility. And I think, like, I mean, Serena Williams was somebody that I really leaned in towards when I was in secondary school. I just loved her power, her prowess on the court. I also loved how she kind of fused fashion and sport, you know, because she was always in the onesies and she'd always the bright, you know, really eye-catching outfits, particularly when traditionally tennis is all about white, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
She really was pushing the boundaries, and I really liked that. And I think it's also feeling that you don't have to put yourself in a box just because you play sport. You can be the sport person, but you can also be into makeup and be into clothes and fashion and music and drama and whatever else. You don't just have to be one or the other. I think that all or nothing mentality is probably why we're losing girls as well.
I think that's really powerful. Anna, before we let you go, you do talk about this a lot in the book. And thank you for my copy, by the way. Tell us the title and everyone can get it everywhere now, can't they?
This is the shameless plug part.
This is good.
Here's what I wrote earlier.
Yay!
Anna's game plan. Now this is, it's a nod, I suppose, to my sports career. And there is a lot of sports stories in there, but it's by no means a sports book. So somebody could pick this up that has, you know, no experience playing sports, not a particularly keen interest in it, but they will find a lot. It is about conquering any hang-ups you have, like uncovering and unlocking confidence and then finding your purpose. And the thing for me, it is all around mindset. It's the simple tweaks that we can make to our mindsets, depending on our circumstances, depending on maybe we might have had knockbacks or setbacks, or we might be struggling with self-belief, or maybe just feeling a bit meh and stuck in a rut. It's giving people practical tools. And I use the word practical because reading a book is brilliant and if you feel motivated, but unless you can actually make changes afterwards, then that book to me is really, it's, you know, there's not much point in it. So it's about giving them a practical guide to actually help themselves navigate through life. And I really hope that when people read it, that they feel it's almost like a helping hand. Like it's a book that I wish I had when I was, you know, a teenager and like a young adult, even, you know, 10 years ago, I wish I had it. So I think that was the reason why I wrote it. And I really hope people enjoy it, because it's been a passion project and it's really important for me that women and girls in particular feel confident in themselves and feel confident to put their hand up and not worry about the fear of judgment or what people might say or the fear of failure. They just go, you know what? I said it a while ago about the definition of success. To me, the definition really of success in life is about having the courage to try. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Not about whether
absolutely.
Or not. It's just giving things a go, saying, I know I deserve to give this a go. And I really hope people get that.
They will get that from the book. And I have it, but I am going to obviously be keeping it because I'd like Joan to be looking at it in a few years' time as well. Annie Geary, thank you for joining us on the Shona Project podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on, girls. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
Thank you. Bye.